rapidly aging incorporated. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Richards. That was me just calling. I had a problem with my my phone. It's Erin calling from the DPP.
Ah, right. I'm not sure why your guy's numbers needed to come up as a blocked call on an outgoing,
no.
But anyway.
No, I know. It's very frustrating. My direct, you do have my direct line, which is on the bottom of my email, but I know I haven't been very available, so I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I just wanted to just clarify with you at this point as well. If you ever get a bunch of missed calls from me, I hope you don't think it's like coming across in any way as harassing or anything.
No,
and I'm,
no, I don't
I
interpret
understand
it that way.
Why I might have a concern on my shoulder about that possibility at the moment, because I just got literally no idea what time you might be in the office at any time of the day, and I kind of feel like you don't a lot of the time either, and that's your job, and so I just don't even know like when to call you, and I only have particular moments where I feel like I can manage a conversation myself, and so
No, I'm not concerned about it. I just I'm sorry that I haven't been available when you've wanted to speak. Eugenia told me that you think you might have broken your wrist.
Well, maybe not broken it, but seriously injured it or messed it up at this point. Yeah, it's largely non-functional. And if I'm not very careful with it, I'm just going to only make it extremely worse.
And that you were hoping, am I right in understanding you'd like me to email the court about adjourning the matter?
Even know. I hadn't even got to the step beyond the fact that right now I can't actually easily do that myself, and so I just have done my usual thing of done nothing because I didn't know what to do in the meantime, and there was a public holiday this week, and then, you know, what day? Is today Tuesday or is it Wednesday now?
Today's Wednesday.
I can't even keep track of time anymore.
It's supposed to be back in on the 16th of October, and I remember you said that that's not a good day because of the way the pay...
that's going to be the end of my Centrelink fortnight, but, like, I don't even know, because at this point I don't even know whether it's even appropriate for me to ask you to write to the court on my behalf in regards
I'm
to that
to
or not, and so, like, I hadn't gotten any further beyond. This has occurred, right? Look, I've been through just about literal hell the past number of days at the moment. I'm seriously... declining still. There's a whole bunch of other things that have been going on. I don't even...
Would you be okay if I asked for either the 20th or the 21st?
Let me switch shoulders so I can use my left hand to bring up the calendar on my computer. Oh, by the way, between 2:30 and 3:30, I have a Coles delivery coming that I've selected to sign for this time because I've had issues with where they've been leaving them. So when that arrives, I'm just going to be interrupted for a couple of minutes because I'll have to just go out my side gate to go around and get it because I still don't have a front door because of the police. Oh, yes, I spoke to Sarah this morning. The police showed up to apparently check on me, in inverted commas, yesterday, which Sarah tells me actually apparently isn't something they're technically really meant to be doing. It's the same officer who was the primary arresting officer and who's the one who kicked my door in a few months earlier because a friend of mine had a mental health episode and called the police about me. And I wasn't the one having a mental health episode. I was asleep with eardrops and other stuff in my ears and a whole bunch of noise-cancelling stuff going. And so they end up kicking my door in, then trying to arrest me and give me a freaking heart attack. And I told them at the time, I can't talk to programmed. Housing has this order against me. And they said, we'll contact programmed. We'll arrange for your door to get fixed. My door's never been fixed since. They just about finished destroying it, trying to kick their way in when they arrested me. But there's a whole bunch of stuff behind it. It's impossible to get in. But at this point, I've had to board it up. But anyway,
they can check to see if you're complying with bail conditions. But saying that, there's no bail conditions that I can see that they would need to check.
Sarah tells me they shouldn't be showing up and that there's nothing under my bail conditions that requires me to answer my door to them, as apparently some people have, or that requires me to answer any of their questions, which I did both by default yesterday because I had to assume that that might be the case and I can't risk being arrested for any circumstances. But, it very much felt like the guy was essentially here just effing with me because he could.
The other thing that sometimes happens, and I don't know if you think this might be the case, is somebody might have called if they were worried about your welfare.
I'm sure that they'll claim that it was a welfare check, but sending the primary officer out who's been nothing but continuously sadistically antagonised me every single time the police have been here for anything ever since I moved to Tuggeranong, after 2 years of the police ignoring all the violence directly across from me despite being at those drug dealers' house almost every single day the first 2 years I moved in there. I mean, sending that one exact officer out of all the officers available to a welfare check, I mean, that's not a welfare check, and I don't think a court would exactly look particularly kindly on the police pretending that it is either, but I'm sure that's what they'll claim. Because the thing is, even if it was a welfare check, that one officer turning up is the only officer that I'm not going to frickin' talk to under any circumstances anyway.
Yes, I understand.
Sorry.
That's okay. You were checking the 20th or the 21st.
Yeah, look, I'm just mentioning that to you because Sarah took note of it and said that she doesn't believe that it should necessarily be occurring, and mentioned that I could obviously lodge a complaint, but I don't know the guy's name. I have him on video footage somewhere, I think, from the arrest, but I don't want to go looking back at that right now. Either the 20th or the 21st would be fine.
Okay. I'll ask the court for either.
My Centrelink pay technically doesn't come in until the Monday, but it actually clears in my account on the Saturday morning every week, though by the time Monday comes around, the bank then updates the post date to the Monday.
Okay.
But it's always in my account, at the start of the weekend. So either Monday or Tuesday should be fine.
Great.
I would like to get this out of the way at the moment, if nothing else, so that you could actually potentially get assigned an assistant right now.
Yes, I will. I'll write to the court now and ask and just explain that you've hurt your wrist quite badly and so you can't write, so I'm doing it, and ask if you'd have a day other than the Thursday. Could it be the Monday or Tuesday the following week?
If it helps, just for any additional context, look, sometimes the heat is already severely getting to me at this point with my pots, and that's the medical thing I sent you. Sometime on Friday, I kind of chase and kill an extremely large redback spider. I'm an extreme arachnophobic. I fell and hit my head quite severely. There's a dent in the wall. I knocked and fell down on the floor. I've wrecked my back, and I knocked myself out probably for a good few minutes. I do not know exactly how long. Severely concussed for about 48 hours, and at one stage, because of the pots and the concussion, sometime on the Saturday, I fell, and normally instinctively I train myself since I'm very young because my muscles and bones and joints are very weak, not to instinctively put my hands out to try and break my fall, because all I do is ever wreck my wrist or my hand or, whatever. Mm-hmm. But in this moment, because of the concussion and stuff, I did the thing that I normally don't do, and that's why I've now completely wrecked my hand or wrist. And maybe it's not broken, but it very much felt like it was and swelled up like it was when I took a bath a few days ago. And if not, it's extremely rare. I tore my tendon in a workplace injury as a teenager and then re-tore it a few years later. So it's been wrecked all my life, but that's the only reason I'm used to managing, with the left hand, only for, periods of time from back then. But, apart from that, I also need to apply for a protection order against my immediate neighbour right now, who's in the adjoining property, on the same property as this, because there's two units on the, attached to each other on the same property. Unfortunately, every single house that ACT Housing has put me in the last 15 years, I've been subject to nothing but severe domestic violence from the immediate people living around me. This is why it has been so disgusting to me, all their accusations to me throughout all this, is that I'm being violent toward them. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? Look at the violence you're leaving me stuck in that you're denying is occurring. The police are like, sorry, deep breath. Deep breath, Chris. Apart from that, I found out on Friday that my former best friend recently took his own life.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He went out of his original group of about 10 friends that they called the Bradfield Crew from the Bradfield High School in Sydney that I later became really good friends with most of them. That's now 50% of them that have taken their lives at this point. Over the last 25 years since I met them, the suicides have only occurred over the last 15 years. But yeah, that's 50% of them that are gone now at this point. That was like my core friendship group when I was young. They were all 19, 20 by that stage, and I was a 16-year-old. But I never hung out with anyone my age. And yeah, there's been a lot going on the last few days. And on top of that, I found an NDIS provider at this point. And the same thing as always, they sent me a contract with a gigantic figure that is way beyond the support coordination funds I have. Apparently 16 grand worth of level 3 support coordination funding isn't enough. They want $36,000. I only have about 50 grand on my plans for the entire year. NDIS denied me a review for years at this point. And as per normal, they're not interested. There's not enough NDIS providers in Canberra at this point. They only want people with high value plans. As soon as they find out you don't have at least 100 grand package or more, they'll just make up any old excuse. There's plenty of excuses they can make to dump a client before they take them on. But same thing as always. I'm not getting any assistance from the NDIS at this point. I don't have any access to doctors. I can't. The police, I have video footage, CCTV footage, the police turning up at my house at Bokon and telling me I couldn't ever call 000 again. I'm not allowed to call emergency services, I'm not allowed to call the hospital. A 000 do just hang up on me if I try. The last three times I went to emergency in the last 5 years, they left me sitting there waiting for more than 12 hours with no treatment, and I didn't end up sending me home each time after more than 12 hours of waiting each time with no treatment. The receptionist at Canberra Hospital is one of the ones who has violently threatened me and threatened my life at many occasions over the past year and a half. He's told me if I ever show up to Canberra Hospital, he will beat the living fucking shit out of me. But then again, there's two mental health ACT mental health staffers from the heart team that have called me from private numbers, making harassing phone calls and death threats to me. Last year for about a 6-month period. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that's gone on that I've never been able to report to the police. Or if I've tried, they've just, completely ignored. There's so much stuff I could get into, and if I have to go to trial, I'm going to have to spend the next year digging through the evidence of all of this stuff, and it's going to be traumatic as hell. But there's some things I've been jotting down, because when I say that this is consuming my life at this point, I wish I was exaggerating. I mean, this is in my thoughts, just invading my dreams. It's in my thoughts when I'm trying to go to sleep, the moment I wake up all day long. So I've started just jotting down notes every now and again, because unfortunately I can't call you once an hour every day, every time I think of something. if you're able to write to the court in regards to the 20th or 21st at the moment, that'd be fine. But look, you can tell them I will make sure that I turn up in person, bar any actual entirely physically disabling accidents, barring me falling and breaking my leg or something like that kind of thing. I mean, anything less. But if they can reschedule it to that, let's move it over to that date, I'll turn up in the morning. And there's just a few things I wanted to kind of touch base with you around. Let's just start with the communication first of all. So I don't know if you're aware, but when your office has been having phone issues, your main line defaults to a Cisco Unity messaging voicemail system. With your receptionist a couple of hours ago, only because they're really friendly and chatting a little bit. I discovered they haven't gotten the voicemail that I've been leaving on that, because apparently they don't know that there is a voicemail system. They have no access to it. They don't think anyone has any access to it. And I've been kind of wondering at this point, how many potential voicemails might have been left on there over time? How long has that issue potentially been present for? How could there be dozens, hundreds, thousands of voicemails on some system somewhere? And just considering who your office is, what could the content of those voicemails potentially contained? I'm astonished and glad if nothing bad has ever come from it at any point yet, but I assume you're more than intelligent and learned and well-read enough to easily and readily think about the potential calamities that could occur from people calling your office on the main line, leaving voicemails that they believe are being checked potentially in regards to some urgent and critical incident at some point and never being gotten. And then, might happen if your office has to account for that at some later point if something bad does end up coming from that at some point. And, I mean, who knows how many messages are on that system? Maybe some lawyers know that no one checks it and not to, but, how many other people call your office that wouldn't know and just leave and have been leaving voicemails like me? I'm just going to leave that with you. But that brings me to a couple of registered letters that I've got in the past couple of days from the ACT Magistrates Court, and just also how that relates to ACAT. And this is kind of interesting. So 2 days ago, I got a registered letter from the court, which is the first thing I've received by mail that I've ever actually had to show my ID, my photo ID, to sign for. before. Okay. I've always had to sign for a package before. Never had to show my photo ID. So that was a letter that is dated the 2nd of October, 25, that proceedings in respect of which you gave an undertaking to appear at have been adjourned to Thursday, the 16th of October, 2025 at 10 a.m., right?
Yes.
That's the first written communication I've got from the point, according to any point. I presume that's in place of me not signing the bail order.
Yes.
That looks all fine and normal. That does touch on an aspect with ACAT, but I'll put a pin in that just for a second, because I got a second registered letter from the court today, 2 days later. And because these are registered letters and I had to sign from them, remember, Australia Post will have exactly a record of when these were delivered to me.
Mm.
So today's letter, dated the 25th of September, the proceedings in respect of which you gave an undertaking to appear of have been adjourned to Thursday, the 2nd of October, 2025, noting today's date.
Mm.
And, of course, this letter is, you know, failure to attend before the court in accordance with those may result in the issue of a warrant for your arrest without further notice to you.
Mm.
Can you guess what my next question is at this point?
I guess you're wondering why they came in the wrong order, because one would presume the one from the 25th was sent before the one from the 2nd of October.
Certainly should have been. Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, and given these are sent by registered post requiring a signature, these will have been fully tracked by Australia Post. So the first letter I got 2 days ago occurred within a time frame that seems normal and is, that'll be my delivery. Do you want to call me back in a few minutes, or do you want me to put you on hold?
Oh, just put me on hold. That's fine.
Okay, one moment. There's no one there.
Oh.
But that sounded like a knock directly on my boarded up front door. I mean, I'm sitting like 3 metres from where it is in, I don't know, weird. Okay, sorry, where was I? The letter in regards to the first one, I mean, considering that this is a letter that, you know, is in regards to, well, you know, you have to respond to this date, and if you don't, this is the communication I presumably gotten that I got, was referring to the, you know, I had no community because I had to ask you, like, you know, what the date of the next hearing even was. But why has that turned up not only 2 days after the first notification after that hearing has already occurred, but for that letter dated 25th of September delivered by registered mail to be delivered on the 8th of October? I mean, like, this is, you know, is this considered adequate by the court, let alone on a disability accessibility standard, just on a general standard? You know, considering that this relates to bail undertakings and arrest and a whole bunch of serious stuff, is this considered acceptable by the court as normal? Like, you know, what is even going on with that in terms of the dates? Mm-hmm. Like, but I'd like to touch on the fact that the Magistrates Court is apparently able to send out registered letters, but when it came to housing, he seeking a police order against me for a forced inspection and providing ACAT with a PO box address that they knew had expired and wasn't my mailing address anymore. And they obviously had my home address and knew that I had blocked email from the entire ACT Gov domain name and wouldn't get any emails through from that. Why does ACAT not send out registered letters to people when, you know, a government agency is requesting a police order against someone? Because the Courts Act actually doesn't require it. The Courts Act doesn't even actually require ACAT to notify someone at all. It requires them to attempt to notify the person, but there's no actual requirement that the person actually be notified. Their email and their physical mail go into a PO box address that have been cancelled, because I don't know if you know PO boxes. They expire at the end of March every year, and you have to reset them. And if you take one out in between that period, you have to take out a prorated, you know, prorated amount up for a 6 or 12 month period up until the 31st of March the next year. And this didn't commence until like the end of April or May. So, you know, those letters would have been returned, you know, by Australia Post back to ACAT. They would have known that they hadn't gotten to me. But, like, you know, like, they don't even go to the effort of sending out a registered post. I mean, like, when a government director is sending a police order against someone and they're going to turn up at their house unannounced, you know, with no notice, and they wouldn't even show me the police order when they turned up on the day and arrested me. I mean, considering that's actually the primary legal basis for the arrest, and given the fact that even though we haven't gotten to this yet, the finalised WPO from Housing was never actually served on me. I realise we haven't gotten to the point of actually establishing that yet, but I know that is the case. And that's the other, that's the rest of the legal basis on which the actual arrest occurred. I think you need to ask whether there is actually a valid legal foundation here for the arrest itself. And if there is not, then how much of this is fruit of the poison tree? Because the thing is, has ACAT, if I can demonstrate that ACAT has not gone to anywhere near sufficient attempts, given the gravity of what the police turning up and their intent to arrest me as a breach of finalised WPO that was never served on me, and, you know, they made no valid attempt to even notify me and got returned, you know, letters and knew they hadn't come to me when they had my home address and could have written to me here at any point, do you think that the proper legal tests and processes and procedures have even been met? And if not, you know, it's the basis for my actual arrest, you know, on that day even sound. I realise that only one of the charges out of the four relates to the arrest that day, but, you know, that arrest relates to the bail proceedings, and so a lot of this is tied to that. So, you know, I'd like you to formally examine whether you think that, you know, the necessary procedures were met that led up to that arrest effectively occurring, because really that day there was no attempt to negotiate with me. PACER or something should have been called in. A police negotiator or something should have been called in. I was clearly having an autistic meltdown, and instead they just aggressively barged in and arrested me, and, like, you know, for a 6-monthly housing inspection for them to come in and tick the box and walk out, you know, to meet a contractual obligation. I mean... Yeah. So, yeah, like, that's one of the points. But it's just, you know, getting these letters from the court, and the fact that they're registered letters, and because I get everything delivered, right? Like, 99% of everything, I buy everything online, I get everything delivered. I'm endlessly getting stuff delivered, signing for stuff, getting express deliveries. Haven't had to show my photo ID in years, but I get all of a sudden these registered letters turning up for the court, got to show my photo ID for them. It just really makes me think about the communication the tribunal does not go to.
Yeah.
Okay, next point. Have you made the request yet for the footage from the watch house?
I have. I haven't received anything as yet.
Can you give me an extremely rough ETA of how long that request might take to respond, just in terms of, we're talking days or weeks, just in terms of
weeks.
Expectation management from my side?
Weeks. I mean, it's not that the actual process of getting that takes weeks. It's just that I know that there's a lot of cases on at the moment, so I'm not sure how quickly they'll prioritise it.
Okay, which is also why I'd like to hopefully get you assistance as soon as possible at the moment, who can work on some of these aspects and report back to you on some of these things, and hopefully speed up the process if you're looking at some of these areas then, because I realise that this case might be like a year away, and so therefore it's not necessarily as much of a time priority for you yet, but I'd like to be able to make... You know what I mean. Look, the question I basically wanted to ask on that I've been wondering about at this point is that... look, let me just ask this as a hypothetical right now.
Yeah.
If the video footage of what occurred to me in those 4 days in custody, once you have viewed it, if you and your boss determine after viewing it that that represents greater or even far greater punishment than you would have sought be seeking in court against me, or that the court would have applied itself, even if I was found guilty of the alleged charges without anything additional being added, you know, in the meantime, you know, even to the... You know, the worst, you know, degree or whatever, if that constitutes greater punishment than what would be applied for these alleged charges anyway, does that itself alone essentially meet that legal test that we've been discussing?
Potentially for the last in time charge, but
not
for all of
them.
Well, there's two separate aspects, because obviously 3 of the charges relate to the order by Housing, but then the other charge relates to an order by a separate person. So I think that when our office looks at it, we'll look at it as the Housing matters.
Because I have other things that can meet, that I believe we can meet the legal test on the other issues. So that actually brings us directly to one of my other questions then. So I don't know if I actually formally requested you to, but the alleged breach with our Attorney General,
yes.
About 24 hours after that voicemail was left, The two major crimes officers showed up extremely late at night in regard to that. Apparently at first wanting to arrest me, although I didn't know that at the time. I was extremely out of it. I'd only had surgery on all my teeth, had like 10 teeth extracted 2 days earlier in one go. I was on huge doses of extremely strong painkillers, like Endone and codeine combined and other stuff, and my prescription cannabis. Those major crime officers came out, questioned me, and then determined that they weren't going to arrest me and told me that I wasn't going to be charged for that at all, and also that they were going to get back to me in regards to my allegations against the AG, and took my contact details and Julie's contact details in order to get back to me, which, of course, they apparently never intended to do because they never did. Have I asked you to request the body cam footage from both those officers from that visit that evening? I don't know whether what they said has any basis in law in terms of them saying that they weren't going to arrest and charge me, but I do think that you should very much view the footage from that night anyway for a number of specific different contextual reasons, but there's probably not much point discussing it so much further unless and until you can view the footage. If not, I have CCTV footage of that night myself, but my clips have little portions missing in between over the hour or something long interaction because they went away at one point and came back like half an hour later. And the clips recorded half of it, I think.
I can see that we have some footage. I don't know whether it's all of it, but I have the footage from about 6:05.
Sorry. Well, they were here for about an hour, and it was two officers, and they were both from major crimes. It's the only time I've ever interacted with ACT major crimes officers in my entire life, I think. But, yeah, I'd like you to request the body cam footage from them for the purpose of the legal test potentially in regards to Tara's charge, and also the basic defence that I would be bringing is pretty much contained in that recording, although I will be contending that I was well beyond the state of legally, medically, you know, with it to any extent, you know, when they were questioning me, which is very obvious. I mean, were they Miranda warning me, I think I made very clear to them, anyway. That's other footage anyway that I would intend to, you know, request to use at the trial. I just wasn't sure if at this point I'd ask you to actually formally request that footage or not.
I remember you said to the officers that you thought the order had expired. The order I have is from the 25th of September 2024, and it says it goes for 12 months.
Yeah, so, there is a valid basis on which, in terms of when it was served on me and how it was served on me and what was going on with the Magistrates Court denying me entire access around stuff with that order the previous year, and it will still be my effective defence that, based upon the way it was all communicated to me and when it was served to me, it had basically expired at that point. But there is an issue with the entire process the Magistrates Court did not undertake and failed to comply with all of their requirements on in regards to how that order was taken out in the first place, that all ties back to. That might be the most difficult one to meet the legal test on. And look, if it's the case that you're able to dismiss the other three charges, the basis of that legal test, and all we're left with is the Attorney General one, then that's fine. I would possibly even be willing to just change my plea to guilty at that point. But like that's a hypothetical, you know, when we arrive at that point. I'm trying to be careful with what I say, but...
there's nothing binding me.
Yeah, look, the breach of the AG's order is quite different to me as well in my own head to the stuff with housing as well. I mean, the stuff with housing affects my direct daily livelihood in a different way. It's not that the stuff with the AG doesn't, but, it's in a different manner. So I'm just looking at my notes here again. Yes, okay. So have you looked at the legislation that governs what the official process is to evict an ACT housing tenant via ACAT for the specific reason alleged by housing in that letter that was sent out to me, which initiates that process? And if so, have you made an official determination that is definitely legally not abusive and or threatening conduct by the directorate itself against me having initiated that process and then not proceeded with it any further, given that it is a very fixed multi-step process as specified in the legislation, and therefore is actually not a breach by the directorate of their own order, because I'll be asking that same question in the court and of the judge at a later point. Mm. And I need to ask it officially of you now. And we discussed it informally, but, yeah. You know, like, I assume there has to be, you know, some type of official process or, you know, something, you know, you do and then record and, you know, in regard to that. So I'd like to ask, you know, that more yeah. formally at that point. I believe it to be a clear breach of the order by the directorate themselves. And if you do not, then I, you know, expect some proof once this goes to trial, if we go to trial, demonstrating that you have undertaken a proper examination to determine that is not a breach by the directorate themselves, because I'll be asking, you know, the judge at that point, you know, about that and pointing out that I asked you officially about that at this mm-hmm. point. And I'm not wanting to say that in any way of a menacing way. I don't really know how to talk about this part of the whole process, and I'm hoping we never actually get to trial, honestly, really.
In terms of our role, we don't have any investigative capacity, so I can't decide whether I think somebody should be charged with something or not, but
Hold on. Are you saying to me that the prosecutor is never able to recommend to police that someone be charged with something based upon in relation to any information you learn under any circumstances?
No.
Essentially? Because that seems...
I'll just finish Sorry. My train of thought. No, I appreciate appreciate that. But so in terms of if police request an advice from us about whether or not to charge, we can provide an advice to them. But the functions under our Act are very clear that we don't have investigative capacity or capacity to...
Okay, so I can more than establish if we go to trial that the police have actively refused to take reports from me of extremely serious crimes at a continuous pattern over the past couple of years. So who would I report it to? I can't report it to the police. The police aren't going to recommend it to you. If a breach has occurred, how am I meant to have anyone even look at whether or not that has occurred, let alone take any action on that? Because if not, is a protection order, a workplace protection order taken out by an ACT government directorate then against an individual like me, not entirely one-sided then? And if that is the basis for a large amount of all the basis of all the charges with housing, then... You know, like, you know, what is the actual legal basis for any of these charges then? Is the legal test actually met, full stop, going all the way back to the legislation? Because if there is no actual practical way in which for me to request enforcement or even examination or investigation of what seems to me to be a pretty clear, deliberate, aggressive, threatening conduct breach by directorate on top of the admissions I have in writing from last year of them breaching the order in their own words, then you know. Look, you don't have to answer this. A lot of the questions I'm going to ask you don't necessarily have to answer directly to me, but I will be asking the same questions if we go to trial, and I presume you'll have to answer them to the judge in some manner at that point, you know, if they agree with me on enough of it.
So I will say, and I know it's very confusing because I am aware that when the court makes these orders, they say it works both ways. If they reach the order, they can be charged.
That's what everyone has told me up until this point.
I know. And it's a bit of an oversimplification in the sense that the order states that in relation to a protected person or protected organisation, the respondent can't do X, Y, Z. And so a protected person or a protected organisation can in some circumstances be charged with like aiding and abetting a respondent breaching an order or inciting, so encouraging a respondent to breach the order, but they can't themselves be charged with like...
Because it is a clear violation of other ACT legislation, including the ACT Human Rights Act and potentially federal legislation as well, for them to have proceeded with an eviction proceeding based on the same allegations that I'd only just 2 weeks earlier pled not guilty to in court and had not in any manner yet had a chance to be tested in court. Yet that is the identical basis on which they tried to evict me. And it is pretty clearly that if this went before something like a federal court judge, it would be determined that housing knew that they had no valid basis to proceed with the eviction yet until the criminal proceedings had completed. So therefore, how could it not be anything other than threatening and abusive conduct under the order? Because this very clearly does not fall under what they are actually permitted to and allowed to do in terms of, you know, any contact with me, despite that order, because it's a workplace order. Do you see the pretty clear logic that I'm pointing at here? I mean, look, tell me if you think that I'm entirely wrong and a judge is going to laugh at me on this, but I'm pretty sure they won't.
I don't have an intimate knowledge of the ACAP proceedings, but I will say in terms of, like, the offence of contravening an order, what the judge will be looking at, or the jury, and I know what you said about that, but the judge or jury will be looking at is the elements of the offence, and so they're going to look at whether there's an order in place, whether you'd been validly served with that order.
And whether or not the other party has breached the order and nothing has been done about that, and more so, the ACT Prosecutor's Office of Police, all responsible bodies have refused to even attempt to do anything about that. That in no way plays into any factor in the law in any way in a trial like this.
My view is that it doesn't go to whether or not an offence is made out, but it could go to something that is mitigatory on sentence, for example. But what the court looks at is the elements and whether the elements have been proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And so there are defences available, for example, like duress, sudden and extreme emergency, all those sorts of things. But in terms of the elements...
So just to clarify, your office has no legal obligation on you to in any way look into what I'm alleging in terms of the breach by the directorate or their own order here?
We don't have any powers. And you can have a look at the Director of Public Prosecutions Act, which sort of sets up what we can do.
Look, I don't hold that personally against you, but I will intend to hold that against your office and the ACT government if or when we go to trial. I may or may not be successful on that, but there are other elements of the Australian law, and the thing is, different pieces of legislation don't exist in isolation. There's one thing I'm going to be good at together. It's weaving together all different threads into a single narrative. I believe I have a solid legal basis on which that I am will be able to demonstrate that, and I'm very clearly being denied any access to the same justice that is being enforced against me in that regard then. Because if protection orders are entirely one-sided, that brings into question under federal legislation the actual legislative basis for the ACT legislation itself, and that actually relates to how the ACT is a territory and not a state, and a whole bunch of other linkages, but because we're not a state, that actually goes to constitutional law elements even.
If we get to a trial, I'm very happy for you to raise it. I appreciate it.
Well, look, I would ask you to at least take into account then the extreme burden on me of all this and in terms of whether or not, it meets that legal test to continue the prosecution, given the fact that apparently there is no one willing to actually enforce the law equally. Like, it's one rule for me and another rule for the police, the government, public servants, and I'm sure you're an intelligent and moral enough person to know that is an absolute joke in a democratic society.
No, I appreciate your position. And I appreciate you raising these matters at trial, and you're entitled to. I just wanted to explain from my perspective. I didn't want to give you any sort of false.
Sorry, no. I appreciate your honesty, and I want you to be blunt and upfront with me at all point. I deal with that better. I'm just extremely bitterly disappointed. I did not actually expect that you or your office would not have some type of legal obligation to actually investigate that and determine that for yourself. That just... I know the law well, but I'm not a lawyer. But there's also the letter of the law, and there's the principle of the law, and there is fairness and justice. And I'll be arguing all, every different element I can, when this goes to trial.
Of course.
But different elements may be relevant at different parts of the trial. To me, it's all one thing, but I realise to you, some things are relevant to sentencing if it gets to that. Some things are relevant to this, but and at some point I might be forced to, wait to bring up certain things until I'm, or, if I'm found guilty and then, at whatever, and I'll have to deal with that, the judge at some point. And, I will also maybe try novel arguments to ask them to allow things that they might even, reject first based upon, it's all hypothetical and theoretical, genuinely do not expect that.
I just wanted to let you know so that you don't...
Because I can't understand the law anymore at this point. Like, I've actually been an extremely law-abiding person all my life, and I always believed that the law applied equally to everyone. Because if it doesn't, if the law does not apply equally to everyone, then... Like it actually removes the moral, legal, or really all arguments to anyone to comply with the law. The only reason a democratic society works is that the law applies equally to everyone. The moment that stops occurring, the entire basis for the law following rules for democratic society itself falls apart. I mean, like, you know, there is basically full justification for vigilante justice when the police only selectively enforce the law on the base on behalf of a certain proportion of the population, because the entire basis for people to follow the law by obligation is removed when selectively police, politicians, the people in power are openly, nakedly, blatantly, like you know, exempted, you know, from.
No, I appreciate,
you know,
what
you're, like, you know, look, yeah. I realize I might not necessarily get very far with the human rights argument, you know, in this criminal trial at the Supreme Court, but this, you know, all these reasons are why I'd rather it be before the Supreme Court than the Magistrates Court. But
yeah.
I would intend to take up all these issues to whatever extent the court will allow me, nonetheless, if we get to that point.
I should be clear, Mr. Richard, that just because my view is that something isn't relevant at the time of trial would be more relevant to sentence.
I know, but right now I'm genuinely hoping I can get you to a point,
yeah,
where you are able to at least discontinue some of the charges, if not all of them, having been convinced that by the time we reach a trial, on top of the punishment that I've already been subjected to by housing, and look, I mean, I'm in daily agony because of the ongoing denial of the aircon and everything else, and there's no way I'm even going to be able to attempt to try and resolve that whilst this whole trial is ongoing. That's going to take an undertaking on my side almost just as big by this point because of everything that's gone on, and this entire trial thing is, and you know, the bail is almost itself. Like, I'm being subjected to physical agony on an ongoing daily basis because of that, on top of what was done to me on the watch house, on top of the, you know, the fact that this is and is going to consume my life for the next year or however long this goes on for. All I can focus on right now is essentially trying to avoid as much of this ending up in trial as possible, and that is entirely illogical in a way and a complete almost antithesis to what your job is and what our supposed adversarial role is meant to be. But as Sarah mentioned this morning, she actually, you have a fan over at Corrections, by the way, she
very
actually
fine.
Doesn't think it's a bad thing that right now the ACT Prosecutor's Office is kind of being forced to be directly exposed to someone like me and forced to, you know, confront, you know, how people like me end up in the justice system in the first place and whether an adversarial justice system is you know, the correct, like, you know, way that things like this should be being dealt with, or, you know, like, you know, how these things occur in the first place, and whether there's, you know, is, like, you know, I'm partly paraphrasing, you know, Sarah and filling in, you know, bits of what she said with, you know, my own thoughts, but, like, you know, whether, like, you know, whether governments, you know, have failed as much, you know, along the way in various different ways, you know, for someone like me to end up in the justice system in the first place. I mean, the biggest evidence I know I can think of that you can access is really the watch house footage. And maybe what Courtney might be able to say, because unencumbered by her actual official role at this point, actually working for the public advocate anymore, I presume she'll be willing to speak extremely freely about everything that went on over all of last year. And I think she'll be shocked that when she finds out, if you talk to her, that you know, that I'm on charges at this point, and that she will say probably say something like, you know, no matter what, you know, the details are alleged against Chris, there is no possible way that this should actually be occurring or that this is fair, you know, without even knowing the details whatsoever, just because of how closely involved she was with all of it last year. But I feel like I'm going to be struggle around my patience in the coming weeks as you
Understandable. I'm going to email the court now, Mr. Richards, just to make sure it doesn't slip off my radar. I'm very sorry I have to go for another meeting.
Sure, no worries.
But I'll copy you in and we'll see what they say about moving it to the 20th or the 21st.
Sure, that was basically all the dot points that I had written down at the moment that I wanted to go with you anyway. At any point, if there's too many calls coming through from indirect line for any reason,
let me know, and
I'll go back to calling through the reception.
I think it's easier. I've just asked the IT team to fix up my voicemail, and they said they're going to do that, so hopefully it'll let you leave voicemail.
Oh, I didn't even know you had a voicemail, because it never goes to one on your one. It either just rings out or I get the Optus number you've been calling. Optus regrets the line you were calling has been disconnected.
No, I'm not at all bothered by the calls, but I I just want you to know that if I don't answer, it's because I'm in court.
No, that's what I presume. That's fine on my side. I just kind of got to yesterday and realized, like, because I looked at my history log on the phone and I went, like, you'll see, like, 7 or 8 missed calls from me at this point. Like, you know, like, because for me, I just kind of do that and I don't think about the impression of that. But honestly, this is how all this started with programming and housing. It's a whole bunch of little things, like, you know, wrongly judging my tone as aggressive because, like, you know, tone policing autistic people and little things like that. Like, sometimes my behavior, just simply me being overeager, can come across as harassing or intimidating or a whole bunch of other things, and I don't even realize I'm doing it a lot of the time, or not until too late. And so, like, this is a civil matter that shouldn't have been criminalized, but honestly, it all started from housing having no idea how to deal with a disabled person like me in the first place, in the beginning, and never having had. And it all comes from a whole bunch of little things that have only built up over time on both sides until this has gotten to a point where this should be what's occurring at this point anymore. Mm-hmm. But that's overall, I guess, the meta thing that I need to convince you of here. But I will completely concede that the housing stuff and the TAR and the AG stuff is separate, at least in terms of that legal test. And this is the final thing that I wanted to mention before I forgot. Look, as far as I can work out, there isn't, but I will ask just in case. Under the US justice system, in a number of criminal circumstances, there is the option for a defendant potentially, I think this is normally negotiated with a prosecutor's office rather than necessarily their right, but to plead no contest we don't have that here, do we?
No, unfortunately not.
Because if we did, especially because I'm not necessarily challenging necessarily what is alleged to have occurred, just whether or not that makes me guilty of the offences I've been charged with, you know, that is the kind of thing that I would be wanting to discuss with your office. Mm. It occurred to me talking to Sarah today that another element of the US justice system that we don't have is a defendant working for the government, you know, as part of a plea agreement or something like that, because that doesn't actually just occur with high-profile hackers over there. It's actually far more common, especially in regards to people with, like, computer skills like me, because, like, the numerous tech and other, like, you know, like, information accessibility issues that I keep endlessly discovering with, like, your office and with corrections and everything else, like, honestly, I should be working for the government doing IT testing and, like, pen testing and stuff right now. If I could plead no contest and agree to, like, you know, good behavior, you know, anger management counseling and, like, you know, 50 hours over the next 12 months working for the government, assisting in, you know, IT and whatever, you know, dumb monkey job, you know, they want to put me to work to, like, you know, that seems to me like it would, you know, probably be a more appropriate resolution or way to deal with this whole thing than the adversarial process in which I'm either guilty or not guilty and there isn't kind of any middle ground whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's nothing under Australian law other than the actual victim diversionary, you know, program thing that comes anywhere near close to that, is there?
No, but there is something that I was contemplating raising with you. I don't know how well received it will be, so I'll just explain it to you and then...
Just hit me up direct. Honestly, people tiptoe around me because they think they're going to offend me, but it actually ends up offending me more when they do it that way.
It has struck me that you are having a lot of mental health impacts. And I obviously, I have a very brief understanding of those, and I'm sure the picture's much bigger. There is a power under the Crimes Act, under Section 334. It's only a power that the Magistrates Court has, so once the matter gets committed, the Supreme Court can't use this. It's a power...
It definitely sounds like that. It's definitely very relevant to mention to me then before that is locked in and unchangeable then.
It's a power that the Magistrates Court has that if they're satisfied that an accused person, so you, are mentally impaired, and that means quite a broad thing, are mentally impaired, and that on an outline of the prosecution case, it's appropriate to deal with you a particular way they can. And what the way they can deal with you is they can either dismiss the charge unconditionally, so say you're mentally impaired.
Or a committal to a psychiatric facility? Is that how what actually occurs? Because I think I know what you're referring to. The lawyer, when I had one for a brief period, mentioned this as a possible defence to some of the charges, but they cautioned that before I anything like pleading not guilty on the basis of mental impairment. They wanted to have a particular conversation with me around what that would involve and what the implications of that were, which never occurred.
Yeah, this is different. So basically, we would call it colloquially like a mental health diversion, because usually the charges have to be not too serious and not violent, not physically violent.
Right, okay.
For it to be appropriate, and somebody has to have mental impairment, and the court can either dismiss unconditionally, so they just dismiss the charge and it doesn't require you to say whether you're guilty or not, or they can send you to ACAT to be assessed. And this is why I was not sure that this would be a good option for you, because of the history of ACAT. They can send you to ACAT to see whether ACAT thinks a forensic mental health order or a mental health order is appropriate.
Oh, no, look, that would be fine, because actually I have forced experience over 3 different hearings now. Mm-hmm. With those at ACAT, and look, they are an absolute complete kangaroo court, but the fact is that there are no rules of evidence whatsoever in their court actually works as much in someone's favour if you're prepared in advance. But under their rules, they're not even required to give someone more than 3 days' notice for a guardianship hearing. Can you believe that? I'm not joking. And when someone's in a serious mental health crisis, and something like that comes out of them nowhere, they have no possible way to possibly prepare for what it is, especially if they've never encountered anything like that before in advance.
Yeah.
But by this point, I would have no issue whatsoever with going back to ACAT at that point, because I could actually prepare for it properly in advance. And, you know, like I've been mentally preparing myself for self-representing myself in the ACT Supreme Court at this point. Mm-hmm. Honestly, going back to ACAT, because I wouldn't even try to engage legal aid. I would just fully self-represent, you know, at this point. So, that would not be at all distressing in comparison to what I'm otherwise looking at. I'm actually not giddy here. I'm only laughing from tiredness, and because it's either like kind of laugh or cry, but like it's actually like, please don't excuse, you know, like the apparent giddiness in my tone, you know, for the wrong reaction there. But,
what a court does, so usually if somebody were represented, the matter would be adjourned for their lawyer to get together medical material to show there's a mental impairment.
This is the problem I've been facing. How do I even get medical assessments myself or anything? I figured the lawyer would know some way to do that. Without a lawyer, I don't even know how I'm going about that at this point.
So the section that allows the court to make this order to divert somebody also allows the court to have a person go to ACAT to be assessed for ACAT to prepare a report on whether they're mentally impaired or not.
What's the legal test for mentally impaired? Because, I mean, like, there's a difference between mentally impaired at the time that the offence is alleged to have occurred versus a mental impairment now versus permanent mental impairment. There's got to be some particular wording around what the legal test of mental impairment is.
So it means now. It doesn't mean necessarily at the time of the offending, but it could, and it doesn't have to be sort of like permanent or severe enough. There's no like level of severity. Mental impairment includes senility, intellectual disability, mental illness, brain damage, and severe personality disorder.
Oh, okay. So this isn't quite the same test as legally mentally incapacitated in a particular situation. Okay, right. And so this is like a lesser version of that test. Would that be a broad, correct statement?
Yes. And so, like, I understand that you have a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder.
Oh, actually, look, that's probably the only false diagnosis I have, because everything else, all my other conditions cause anxiety in different ways. And that is just the equivalent of taking an autistic ADHD person's teenager and going, oh, you're depressed, you've got anxiety. But every other condition I have makes generalized anxiety disorder look like nothing, because generalized anxiety disorder as a condition is like the it's the literal garden variety of mental health conditions. I don't even think it's actually in the DSM. It's that garden variety.
I am of the view that I would probably agree.
Look, what would more closely meet the test is there's actually 2 different versions of PTSD diagnosis. There's standard PTSD and there's like a sustained, severe, like extended permanent trauma version of PTSD. I've already been diagnosed with that far more severe one 2 years ago by this point. I have medical records that I could produce to that, although they wouldn't be easy to dig out. That would probably make the test far more than generalized anxiety disorder, just to insert a better hypothetical box for you there. Continue.
I think the frustration is that mental impairment doesn't really contemplate neurodivergence. Well, it doesn't seem to on my reading.
It's all right. That's no surprise. What I've pretty much discovered by this point is that nothing in society really actually... what was that word you just used?
Neurodivergence.
No, the other one.
Oh,
like accommodates, appreciates, something like that.
Doesn't contemplate it.
Contemplate, yes. Yes, I don't think anything society contemplates neurodivergency really in any way, and especially since apparently in the last few days there is a brand new scientific consensus that autism isn't a single condition and definitely does not have a single cause either, and that's brand new news at the moment, and I don't even know how to even begin wrapping my head around that right now.
Yes, and so my view is that like it doesn't fit neatly into any of these things. So certainly if you have a diagnosis of complex PTSD, that would classify as mental illness. So are you okay if
I have more than a dozen permanent chronic conditions, including of which the autism and ADHD are just two of those dozen or so.
Okay. What I would propose to do is what I can do is I'll send you an email with this section in it so you can have a read of the section itself. I can raise it with the court on the next occasion that I think that this might be a matter where it's appropriate to divert because of mental health.
Okay.
You can say whether you're open to that or not. You can
what would be involved with...
Diversion.
No. What would be involved in terms of making that request to the court, and is it does it occur if you request it, or does it occur if the court concurs? Like, should we just table this conversation over till tomorrow at this point? Also, because apparently my order was delivered at 3:03 and must be sitting outside the front of my house, clearly marked signature required. It's all right. There's only there was some fresh refrigerated fish with it that I should.
How about
probably
I
go get.
Give you a call at 12 PM tomorrow? Is that okay? An okay time?
Look, I think what you're mentioning is definitely worth exploring. And just off the top of my head, I'm wondering whether we could maybe request the court reschedule a hearing date, but reschedule on the basis I don't know whether we can like take a step back in the process of where they're up to at the moment, but could we ask them to kind of just pause the process at the moment, and in terms of something like, you know, there is reason that I may, you know, the defendant might wish to change his decision on, you know, being committed across to the Supreme Court or not, and in the meantime, could there be a hearing scheduled on this date and have many weeks' time would be appropriate for you and I to discuss in the meantime to then look at that at that point, and if not, you know, have the committal occur at that hearing instead on that date. Would that be the general rough way to approach this pending our conversation tomorrow?
I don't think they will give us a further adjournment sort of beyond the 20th or the 21st of October, but there's no reason that we have to commit it on that day because we can only commit it on that day if both you and I agree that it should be committed. So we could still go in front of the magistrate on the 20th and explain that we're looking at a 3-3-4 and can we have a further adjournment.
Okay, that sounds like a mental yes, both yes and no to my question, I think, in terms of what I was asking, and probably to enough of an extent that I think we can leave this all over till tomorrow then.
Okay, I'll call you
at this point because I am feeling quite mentally tired now, but I actually really want to continue with this conversation right now if that wasn't
the case. So let's set aside an hour tomorrow. I'll call you at 12. It's in my diary, so...
Okay, let me actually just jot that down so that doesn't go in my brain and out my ear. I don't know, nose, whatever. 12 PM, and that is Thursday, right?
Yes, yeah.
Sorry.
Or I can call you Friday.
No, I actually have a scheduled telehealth. I have to do another telehealth with my cannabis prescription provider at the moment.
Okay.
So you have to do it every 6 months. I have to get my script renewed. They've scheduled that for midday on Friday at the moment.
Okay.
So tomorrow is actually perfect. And right now I'd rather not wait 48 hours to continue this conversation, and I should be fine tomorrow for this.
All right, great. I will give you a call at 12 tomorrow then.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Reese. Bye-bye.